You're listening to Dauber Prospects Radio, Episode 3. We go through a bunch of prospects at training camp, look at some of the top rookie ADPs, and talk to Ryan Wegman from Hockey Prospectus. So let's get started. Hey everybody, Paul Zwombeck here. Welcome to Episode 3 of Dauber Prospects Radio, the best and only fantasy hockey program dedicated to hockey prospects. Thanks for downloading and listening. If this is your first time listening, thanks for coming. The DPR show is produced every other week for your enjoyment, and show notes are found at dauberprospects.com. Come back often and feel free to add the podcast to your favorite RSS feed or iTunes. You can also follow us on Twitter at @DPR_show or email us at prospectradio@dauberprospects.com. Now let's get into the show. Peter, how's it going?
I'm doing really well, Paul. Thanks. How are you doing, man?
I'm not too bad. You've been watching a lot of hockey. A lot of training camps are halfway through. What do you think?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. I'm getting pretty anxious for the season to start so we can start scoring some stats at our hockey pools. But for now, I'm just happy to be watching hockey.
Yeah, how are your fantasy drafts going?
All done.
All done. Nice. I'm about halfway through. So, yeah, I'm very excited about a couple of my drafts, and now I've got to get into the rest of them. I got a couple slow drafts going, so I'm interested to hear your opinions on some of these young kids still at camp. Let's start at the top, Arizona. Jacob Chychrun fell in the draft. What's he looking like?
He's looking great. He is turning some heads in Arizona with Oliver Ekman-Larsson at the World Cup to start the preseason. He was playing top pairing minutes. He's really impressed the coaches there. His skating, his compete level are elite. This time last year, he was considered possibly the second overall pick behind only Austin Matthews. And then he slid down the ratings a little bit and then on the draft day, but we're starting to see now why he was originally rated so high. He hasn't played less than 22 minutes a game. And at this point, I'm pretty confident he's going to start the season in the NHL, at least in 9 games. And he's going to compete with guys like Klaas Dahlbeck, Kevin Connaughton, and Jared Tenorti for that final roster spot on Arizona. That's a winnable battle, in my opinion.
Yeah, that'll definitely hurt the Sting if he ends up staying in the NHL. I'd like to see him play the whole year.
He just might.
Okay, so Boston, Frank Vatrano's out for quite a while. Who's going to fill in for him?
So far it's been Danton Heinen. He is scoring at a goal a game pace in preseason. He's turned a lot of heads. Vatrano's out for a while, so there's a position there that's available. Heinen, right so far, has walked through the front door and taken the job. It's his to lose now.
Awesome. Calgary's got Keith's son, Matt Tkachuk. What's he looking like? Is he sitting in front of the net and just putting in dirty goals?
He's only got one goal so far, I believe, at the time we're recording this. But yeah, he's played in 3 games so far, and he's played really solid. He's a physical two-way. The goal he scored was in front of the net, like you said, and he's looking like he's NHL ready. One thing I really like about him, I heard Brian Burke say it at the draft, and he's talking about him. What Brian Burke said was, there's just no real nice way to say this, but he's got some dirtbag in him.
Of course Brian Burke would say that.
A classic Brian Burke line for sure. But yeah, there's a possibility he gets at least a cup of coffee to start the season in the NHL. That wouldn't surprise me at all.
All right,
another player in Calgary, yeah, is Freddie Hamilton. Brian Burke likes his brotherly connections. He tried to connect the Shens when he was with Toronto. Freddie Hamilton signed a 2-year one-way contract this offseason, so they're financially committed to him. He's got 2 goals in 4 games in the preseason so far, but his forte isn't going to be offense like his brother. He's fourth line. He's really good on draws. In fantasy hockey, he'll give you some hits and whatnot and play a fourth line role. So this is a deep, deep fantasy option, but he's a player that you might get some value in a really late round pick if your league is really deep.
All right, let's go to the talent-filled Edmonton Oilers. Who's standing out in that talent-filled roster?
Drake Kujula. Edmonton won the Drake Kujula sweepstakes this summer, signing him as an unrestricted free agent out of North Dakota, where he's fresh off a championship season. He's a dynamic offensive player. He's got skill. He skates really well, very very mobile and agile. He is pushing the pace offensively, carrying the play. Looks dynamite on the power play. He's got 2 goals in 3 games so far. He's been impressive. On the back end, a player I actually noticed, he had a cup of coffee last year in the NHL. He's played some big minutes in the short time he was up, and that's defenseman Jordan Osterle, who I just signed as a free agent in the Dobber Prospect Fantasy Hockey League.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. I think he's got a really good chance to make the team in a bottom pair. He's he can skate really well. He's a modern day transition style defenseman. He can run a power play. I think he'll start the season in the 5-6 bottom pair on Edmonton, but he has the ability to move up the depth chart, especially if there's an injury.
I really hope he sets up Eberle. So just Osterle to Eberle all day. That'd be awesome.
The play by play guys probably won't like that.
Yeah, and how about the Finnish sensation, Puljujarvi?
You know, this the talk on him isn't quite as shiny and optimistic as it is with Kujula. There is a possibility that Puljujarvi starts the season in the AHL, just until he gets maybe accustomed to playing in North America. He hasn't been as standout as some of the other guys in Edmonton.
Yeah, that's kind of disappointing.
Yeah, you know, I wouldn't hit the panic button on him. I think the upside on him is still monumental. And if he starts the season in the AHL, and it's not like this Canadian Junior Hockey League, he's not stuck there for the season. The Oilers can call him back up. It's up and down, send him up and down as many times as they want. And, you know, so starting in the AHL wouldn't necessarily be a bad thing for him career-wise. It might hurt you in your fantasy hockey league if you picked him super early. But if even if he does start in the AHL, he'll be up soon.
Yeah, and he might get the McDavid sweepstakes if Lucic doesn't find chemistry quick with him.
That's right.
All right, in Chicago, Tyler Mott, your guy.
Yes, we'll talk about this in the second segment, I'm sure, but Tyler Mott has been a standout at Chicago. Tracy Myers, the beat reporter for Chicago, is she's got her Tyler Mott fan club card, and she's waving it in everyone's face. He's played 3 games. He's got 2 goals. He's had 11 shots. He's had a number of breakaways. I think he's made the team. It's just a question of he's a versatile player, so the Hawks can play him in a bottom six. But in preseason, he's shown he's got the ability to play an offensive top six role, and I'm curious to see if he can make it on shotgun with Jonathan Taves.
Yeah, and they're breaking up Kane and Panarin, which is kind of weird, so maybe he fits it with one of those two.
Anisimov and Panarin.
Oh, okay.
Kane is the line, yeah. And if they split up Kane and Panarin, I don't think it'll be for long.
Yeah. All right, Montreal Canadiens. Oh, Montreal Canadiens, Sergachev sticking around?
Yeah, he has not looked out of place. We talked about him in the last show. He dominated in the rookie tournament game. He hasn't been dominating as strongly in the preseason. The competition level was a little higher, but he still looked great. He's made some great rushes. He doesn't look like an 18-year-old. He's got NHL size, skating, vision. The top defensive pairings in Montreal, the top five, are pretty much a lock already, right? You got Weber, Markov, Petrie, Beaulieu, and Emelin. If Sergachev doesn't start the season, they have to send him down to junior. They can't call him back up, so they can't bring him back up from the AHL. So he's competing with Patterin, Barbario, and Redmond for the final roster spot. I would be shocked if he didn't stick around for part of the 9-game, if not the whole 9-game, and they just kind of rotate those guys in and out and see how things go. Maybe there's an injury and he can stretch it out. It wouldn't be unlike Markov to suffer an injury. So while there's the lure of sending him back to the OHL because, you know, Windsor's hosting the Memorial Cup and it would be great, the Memorial Cup's not going anywhere. Sergachev could start the season in the NHL and he could stick.
Yeah, maybe he hits that 30-game mark and goes back for World Juniors maybe and then goes to lead the Spitfires into the Memorial Cup. Maybe that's what their game plan might be.
Could be, could be. I think it has a lot to do with a healthy blue line. Like I said, the top five guys are pre-cemented. They're not. He's not sitting out any of those guys in his rookie year at 18 years old. Turin, Barbario, and Redmond, he sure could. But as the season wears on, competition gets a little bit more intense. So, yeah, World Juniors could be the end of his rookie season. We'll see.
Yeah, so the Devils have a completely opposite defensive core. I don't even know if they have six NHL-ready defensemen, but who's standing out in that defense core?
New Jersey signed a free agent in the offseason. He's a Frenchman, and they signed him out of Liiga, the Finnish league. His name is Johan Vitu. He's not a kid. He's 27 years old, so it's now or never. He's going to make the team or not. And he has 5 points in 3 preseason games so far. He's not that small. He's 6 foot, about 200 pounds, so he's not an undersized player. And he's your modern-day puck mover in the NHL as well, so I think he's made the team.
Ah, that'd be nice to see. The Islanders got a Matthew Barzal. Is he sticking around or going back to Seattle?
I think he's playing second line center in New York this year. He's played so well, it's going to be really hard for the New York Islanders to not put him down. He's 4 points in 4 games played. I think he's a Calder sleeper.
Wow. So Strom moves over to a wing or third line?
Probably the wing.
Yeah.
Barzal could play the wing, but yeah. I could see that happening.
Wow.
He's
okay.
That good.
Wow. Another kid that could go back, could stay up, Konechny in Philadelphia. What are your thoughts?
Again, he's another player that he has all the tools you want to see him have in the NHL. He's got, except for size, but he's not a small player. He's strong, short. You know, he's never going to be 6'4". But, you know, he competes physically hard. He skates really well. He's got a great shot. He's got 2 goals in 3 games so far in the preseason. I think he'll get a start in the NHL and then probably end up back in Sarnia. We'll see. But I think he'll be in the NHL to start.
Man, Sarnia's crossing their fingers wanting Jacob Chychrun back and Travis Konechny. That would really, really bolster this thing.
Yeah.
All right, Toronto Maple Leafs, the prospects of prospects, Matthews. How's he looking in training camp in that Maple Leaf jersey?
Well, he's played 1 game so far, and he didn't look bad. Of course, he broke the glass in his first practice.
Oh, geez,
for some reason, that's newsworthy, huh?
Yeah, that was bigger news than the actual World Cup game that was played that day.
Indeed. The thing about Matthews is for the last year, with all the pressure he's had with the draft year and whatnot, he's just steadily been projecting up. He made the World Junior team for the U.S., of course, and he put on a great show there. He made the World Championship at the end of the season with Team USA. Made the roster in a bottom role. By the end of the tournament, he was their best player. In their final game, he was the guy that they turned to in the final minute of the game. And he had a chin strap problem with his helmet, and the refs were telling him to get off the ice. Rather than him get off the ice, the coaches gave him a helmet from one of the other NHL players on the bench and told Matthews to get back in there. And then for the World Cup that we just had, again, he was kind of an afterthought for the roster, made it based on his performance at the World Championship, started in a lower seeding. By the end of the tournament, he was one of Team North America's best players. He was just dominant. Going into the Toronto Maple Leafs training camp right now, Mike Babcock saying he's going to start him as a third-line center, and I'm sure he will. And I'm sure it will only take a matter of maybe a month, maybe two, before Matthews is the Leafs' first-line center for the next decade and one of the top centers in the NHL. He's the real deal.
Yeah, the Leafs fans are going to have to practice patience because you don't want this kid coming out first-line. Like, let Babcock teach him how to play defensively as well on that third line, and then he'll play his way up. Don't you worry about that.
I agree.
Mitch Marner sticking around.
Yeah, you know, the funny thing is, on episode two, we talked about Mitch Marner, and I think it was episode two, and I said how he was meh at the rookie tournament. He just didn't stand out. There was none of that wow factor. Well, in training camp, he's found it. He's been very impressive, and he has shown the wow factor. He's making some plays, some passes. He is carrying the offense for the Leafs in the line that he's on. He's going to make the team for sure. Again, to start the season, he'll play at least the 9 games. And the Leafs have a lot of young players that they can go to. A lot of them they can move up and down from the AHL into the NHL. It's a short cab right away. Marner is the OHL or the NHL, though. It's one or the other. So if they send him down, he ain't coming back. So maybe he'll stick around to the World Juniors and then finish the season with London and win another Memorial Cup. But at this point, from what I've seen from him in the preseason, I think he's... It could be here to stay.
Jeez, that's gonna be big. Vancouver Canucks got 2 kids that came out of nowhere. Who are these guys?
Well, they signed another college free agent, Troy Stetcher. He's a defenseman, and he could be this year's Ben Hutton. He's 22 years old, so he's already matured and seasoned. And he has been a standout player for them on the back end. He carries the puck real well, makes some really nice, heady offensive plays. He's got a lot of confidence for a guy that's never played in the NHL before. You know, rushing the puck up, joining the rush, running the power play. He's got a couple of points. I'm not sure off the top of my head what his points are, but yeah, there's a lot of talk about Troy Stetcher. I think he makes the team. Edler Tanev, Hutton Gudbranson. Those are the top 4. And then they've got 6 guys competing for the bottom 2. Nikita Triamkin, Andre Pedan, Lucas Pisa, Philip Larson, and Biega. And then Stetcher is the 6th competing with that. So, again, I think that's a pretty winnable battle. Plus, he's 22 years old, so you know he's not an 18-year-old.
Yeah, so
the other
Vancouver's other guy that is lighting up the score sheet?
Yeah, the other guy's Anton Rodin. Now he's coming out of Europe. He's not a free agent signing like some of the other European imports coming in this year. He's a draft pick. He's had a tour in the AHL already and kind of flamed out there. And he was a prominent scorer in the SHL, Swedish Hockey League, last year. He's leading the Canucks in scoring in the preseason with 5 points in 4 games. 25 years old, he's shown, well, he's going to make the team for sure to start the season. Again, season competition picks up. I don't think he's going to lead the Canucks in scoring by the end of the year. That's not what I'm saying. But I think he's a player that you could probably get sneaky good value on late with a late pick in your draft.
Nice. All right. Last but not least, the Winnipeg Jets. Prospect not named Patrick Laine. Who is he?
Kyle Connor has come as advertised. He's a Calder candidate. And he scored a real nice goal last night where from just off the goal line with a real, real tight angle, he put it in the top corner. And I'm pretty sure he banked it in off the goalie's head.
Oh, wow.
Uh-huh. Yeah. He's got sublime skills. He's going to play full-time in the NHL in a top 6 role for the Jets this year. And the Calder candidate trophy race could come down to him and Laine.
Oh, that'd be pretty sweet. All right, that was a quick run through of NHL training camps. We missed a lot of teams, we missed a lot of players. We tried to hit on most of the guys that have a lot of questions from fantasy owners, fantasy drafters. Anybody, if you have any other questions, Peter Harling, you are the guy to go to. P. Harling on Twitter. Ask him anything. He'll try to get to it. If you want to get to me, I know some of these guys. I'm not watching nearly as much hockey as Peter. So, yeah, that's our training camp rundown. Thanks, Peter.
Yeah. Also, you know, check out the Prospect Ramblings. We got a lot of writers who are contributing on the site that watch a lot of hockey as well. So we got you covered on Dauber Prospects.
Yeah, so check out dauberprospects.com for all that content. In segment 2, we're going to look at Fantrax ADP of some of these top rookies. where Peter would take him in your redraft leagues coming up. Segment two, our prospect feature, focusing in on ADP on Fantrax. But first, let's go back to last episode. We had our Twitter poll. First question, Nick Schmaltz, Tyler Mott. Peter, who'd you have?
I took Tyler Mott.
And you were 23% of the votes. I got the 77 with Nick Schmaltz. Not too bad of a turnout. 65 votes. Pretty good. But, as you said in the first segment, Tyler Mott is winning that battle on the ice. So, looks like you're the smarter guy with 23% of the voters.
Well, it's preseason still, so we'll see when the regular season starts.
Yeah. Okay, next, Ivan Provorov, Zach Werenski, a little bit tighter race. 46% Zach Werenski, 54% Provorov. Which side were you on?
I'm on the Provorov side on this one.
Yeah, so you took it this time. With 85 votes, an extra 20 guys got in on the voting. That's nice to see. And then one more, Mikko Rantanen and Nick Ritchie. Who would you rather? I went with Rantanen, and I had the majority at 70%. You had Nick Ritchie at 30%. Still feel the same way?
I'd like to change my vote.
Yes, okay. Why is that?
Well, you made a compelling argument, and I think Rantanen, especially in a long-term situation, he's got younger star players to work around. Either he'll be playing on a wing with either MacKinnon or Matt Duchene. And Ryan Getzlaff and Corey Perry, well, those are excellent options to play with now for Ritchie. 3 years from now, the Colorado situation will be a lot more attractive.
Yeah, and I feel like they cycle guys through that one spot on Getzlaff Perry's wing. I don't think anybody cemented themselves in, so I think they just play whoever's hot at the time.
Yeah.
All right, let's get into segment two, prospect feature ADP on Fantrax. I'm going to give you a rookie. We're just going to base solely on rookies for this year. This is for redrafts, not for keeper leagues. This is, say, 12, 14-team leagues. Fantrax ADP, average draft position. Let's start at the top. Matt Murray is going 80th overall. Would you take him over Duncan Keith, Zach Parise, Tyson Barry, Ryan Suter in that area?
It's tricky because it's apples and oranges in this situation where Matt Murray's a goalie and the other players in that range are forwards. And I think that would have a lot to do with your team needs at this point. Do you have a goalie or not? So that's a difficult one to answer, but I would probably not, because I think Fleury is going to do a really good job of stealing the majority of the starts this season.
All right, so you want some goalies. Marc-Andre Fleury's going two picks later. Peter Mrazek's going six later. Before him, Roberto Luongo's going eight picks ahead and 72%. Or a 72 spot, and Devin Dubnyk at 66, so that's quite a big jump. Murray over Luongo, Dubnyk?
Yes, because Luongo is injured to start the season, so that's a bit of a red flag for me.
Okay.
And I'm just not a Dubnyk fan. I don't like him. I'd never draft him.
So you wouldn't move Murray up to 66 overall. You would move Dubnyk down. So Matt Murray's kind of in the right range, 80th overall?
Yeah, and the fact that he's right there with Fleury, that's a tough one too. But I think I'd probably go with Fleury over Murray because, you know, he's got the golden ticket with the contract and a longer track record.
Yeah,
so I'd feel more comfortable with Fleury, unless it was a cap pool, in which case, Murray.
Yeah, so would you take him over Peter Mrazek? Either, like, Matt Murray, Fleury, would you take him over Mrazek or Bobrovsky's the next one down?
Mrazek's an interesting scenario because
he's
in a better
situation.
Boat, right? Well, he's in a similar situation in that. Actually, I think I like Murray better because I'm just not confident how many games Detroit is going to win. I think Mrazek will play the majority of the games for them this year, and I think he's an excellent goalie. I'm a really big Peter Mrazek fan, but Detroit is just not trending in any direction, and they're just kind of stuck on the brink of, are they a good team or are they a bad team? And usually when teams are stuck there, they end up going down because they aren't able to draft very, very high. So probably go with Murray over Mrazek in that situation.
Okay, so is Murray's stock kind of in question because of the wrist injury? He's going to miss probably 10 to 12 games. That's likelihood. If Fleury takes off with the net, what happens with Matt Murray? Is he kind of just going to be a really good backup?
Yep.
Yeah, so I'm kind of staying away from Matt Murray. I'm a huge fan of Matt Murray, but I'm kind of staying away. There's other goalies out there that are going to get starting roles, maybe on worse teams, but I wouldn't want to bet against Fleury going soft halfway, 10 games in. I think Fleury plays pretty good at the beginning of the season, so that Murray might have a tough time stealing the net.
Agreed.
All right, the big dog, Austin Matthews, going 93rd overall. He's going around Milan Lucic, Justin Falk, TJ Oshie, Matt Duchene, Daniel Sedin, Kyle Okposo. Do you like him in that range?
I do. I think Matthews could flirt with 40, 50 points in his rookie season in Toronto. Some of the players that you just mentioned are really established, consistent point range guys. In a one-year league, I would probably go with the steady Eddie consistent players. Matthews has got the upside. He could go way higher, but he could also not. You know, Toronto might not be a real strong team this year. There will be pain, as Mike Babcock said. There'll be more pain this year. He could play on a line with Trevor Van Riemsdyk, and those two could have something special happening, but they could not.
Okay, Matt Duchene or Austin Matthews?
Matt Duchene.
Okay.
In a one-year league, yeah.
All right, go down the list. Jason Spezza or Austin Matthews?
Spezza.
Dylan Larkin or Austin Matthews?
Matthews.
All right, so he's kind of in the 100th overall. Dylan Larkin's at 110 right now on Fantrax, so the next up would be Jason Spezza at 98. And then there's a run of defensemen in there.
Yeah, there's some risk on the Spezza file too with his history of back problems. You guaranteed that he's going to miss some games with injury. I would say at least 10, probably 20. But even still, Dallas is just such a juggernaut of an offensive team. I really like Spezza to outscore Austin Matthews this year.
Okay, so I had a draft the other day. Austin Matthews went 100. Patrick Laine went 101. But on Fantrax, they're 30 picks apart. Does that make sense?
As long as Patrick Laine's ahead of Matthews.
Yeah, that's not how it is on Fantrax. Matthews at 93, Patrick Laine at 122. I think Laine's going way too low.
I would take Patrick Laine before I would take Austin Matthews in a one-year fantasy league. I get why Austin Matthews went first in the draft, and I don't even think it was close. Positional bias, franchise center, and a shooting winger. You always take the center in that situation. But this is fantasy hockey, and Patrick Laine is in a way better situation in Winnipeg than Austin Matthews is in Toronto. And I think Patrick Laine is a lock for 50 points.
Yeah, so would you take Laine over Max Domi at 112.
Ooh, that's tough. What are some other options?
Van Riemsdyk at 111.
Yeah, I think I'd take Laine over Van
Riemsdyk. O'Reilly at 111.
In a one-year league, points only. That's pretty close. I think Laine is a lot more sexy of a pick, and it'll be more fun having him on your fantasy roster.
Yeah.
And I don't know that the points difference would be that significant. So just for fanboy points, I would probably take Laine over Ryan O'Reilly in that situation.
Yeah, and we should mention that we're both Laine over Matthews guys.
Yeah.
And I like Laine as a right winger. I thought he was going to be come out as a left winger, actually, and he's on Fantrax as a right winger, so he might get dual eligibility once they figure out their positions for the year. I don't know, does Fantrax change halfway through the year, or 10 games in, 12 games in, do they change position eligibility?
Yeah, they definitely update it.
Yeah, okay.
Beginning and mid-season, yeah.
All right, so yeah, Laine could have a chance at getting that left wing, right wing dual eligibility, which would be really big. Jonathan Drouin's mm-hmm. going around him. Would you take Drouin or Laine? That's tough because Drouin's with Stamkos right now. Would you go Drouin?
He was so impressive in the end of the season in the playoffs with Tampa Bay last year. So you've got, while granted it's a small sample size, it's still an established NHL track record.
Yeah.
And Laine's not played a game in the NHL. And Laine didn't look that strong at the World Cup against the elite competition. So, yeah, I'd probably go Drouin over Laine in that situation.
Okay, so we kind of got Laine, and probably a 115 is probably a good mark. I think Druin's going a little low, but you would take him over guys that are going 112, so in the 112 range. Let's move down to another Maple Leaf. William Nylander's going 155. He is dual eligible on Fantrax center right wing. That might boost his stock a little bit. Yammer Yager's just below him. Bobby Ryan, Mika Zibanejad in for the Rangers. Taking him over, or Nylander over Yager, Ryan, Zibanejad?
Yes.
Okay, let's move him up and see. Would you take him over Kadri? That's at 148. Or Vincent Trocheck at 148 as well.
Probably not.
Yeah,
probably
so he's at 150, just behind those guys.
Yeah,
Kyle Turris.
Again, you've got proven. No, see those guys. There are certain commodities. You know what you're getting with them.
Yeah.
So it depends on where you're at with your team and your positional balance. And you know, if you need to swing for the fences, then sure, take Nylander because he'll probably come in around that point range, but he has the potential to score higher.
Yeah.
It's unlikely, but, you know, it's more likely, I think, that he scores higher than he scores lower than those guys. But those guys like Kyle Turris, he's a very consistent player. So is Nazem Kadri. I don't see their point totals fluctuating from what they've done the last 3 years very much. So Nylander is a bit of a wild card. So what's your appetite for risk in that situation, I think?
Yeah, and then we're going down to, like, 200 level picks, so guys that are on the fringe of being picked. Puljujarvi's got 213. We talked about him in the segment one. He might start in the AHL, so that might be why he's kind of lower.
Mm-hmm.
Defenseman Provorov is going 227. You like him there? Are you drafting him in a redraft?
I do like him there. I like him ahead of Werenski, but only slightly.
Yeah, well, Werenski on Fantrax is going about 100 points later, 100 spots later. So that I think that's a huge deficit. I don't think they're that far apart.
No, and in a one-year league, I might even be inclined to take Werenski ahead of Provorov because I think Werenski's competition in Columbus is much more manageable for him to produce points in the first year than what Provorov has in Philadelphia with Gostisbehere. And Werenski proved in the AHL that he's able to compete and dominate at a professional level. He was the best defenseman in their Calder Cup run. He was the best player in the Calder Cup run. So in a one-year league, I probably go Werenski over Provorov. But long-term, I still like Provorov.
Yeah, so in between them, Bjorkstrand's in there at 310. There's a lot of rookies ahead, and I think that has a lot to do with rookie drafts that are happening. Let's just throw out some names. DeBrincat, Carter Hart. I think a lot of these guys at 250 are being pulled up with rookie drafts or like starter drafts. Who else? Jimmy Vesey going at 325. Is he worth a draft pick? Late round draft pick?
Yeah. He's another player coming out of college, so he's not 18 or 19. He's 22 or whatever he is. Full 4-year college term under his belt, and the New York Rangers will try to put him in a top six role. And so far, he's shown in training camp and preseason that he's capable of managing that. And the Rangers have a bevy of wingers that they've signed as free agents and whatnot, acquired. So there's competition for jobs there, but in a deep enough pool, you should be drafting Vesey. Yeah.
Yeah. Is that the same with Sebastian Aho? He's going 357. That's really late.
No.
No. Okay.
I think that's way low. I think Sebastian Aho should be a lot higher on the list. He should be up there with the Lineys and Matthews. I think he'll score in that point range.
Really?
Yeah. I think Aho scores about 45 points this year, playing in a top six pairing with Carolina.
So you just think people are forgetting he's not as hyped as Line A and all the other Calder top picks? Like, put Aho on your queue and get him at the end because nobody else is paying attention to him?
I wouldn't say no one's paying attention to him. But yeah, based on this, you would be able, he's a very good value pick. I would move him up higher. I wouldn't use this as my draft list. I'd move him up higher and made sure I got him. He played in Pro League last year in Finland, was great, dominated at the World Juniors playing between Line A and Puljujärvi. Didn't look out of place, didn't look like they were carrying him. He was right up there with them. And he played at the World Championship with Finland too, and he looked great. I don't have much doubt that he's going to make Carolina in a first line, second line at worst capacity this year.
Yeah, and this is why I want to run this through you. The ADP, I was looking through it, and I did a draft the other day, and I saw that I sorted by ADPs, and I saw all these guys way, 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 way down. And I was like, why are these guys so far down? This is why I wanted to talk to you, because I wanted to make sure our listeners knew that these guys got to be moved way up. Don't just go by ADP. Don't just go by ranks. You should be making your own list. You should have some sort of rankings that you can deal with that brings these guys up and doesn't get them buried with like Nathan Beaulieu, Frank Corrado, Mike Condon. Like they're stuck in a bunch of guys that probably shouldn't be drafted. So that's why I wanted to get this segment out there for the listeners.
Yeah, and a lot of people go into drafts with last year's stats, and they draft on last year's stats. Well, you're not going to find any of these players on that list at all. They won't even be on your draft list if you're looking at last year's stats, because these guys weren't in the NHL last year. But yeah, They'll all be in the NHL this year, and they will all be making an impact, especially Sebastian Aho.
Yeah, so we're going to post these on our show notes. We're going to put up all the guys we talked about and their ADPs of Fantrax from when we recorded this. Hopefully, a lot of these numbers will be adjusted by the time you're drafting. If not, put them on your favored list to be watch out for. Definitely don't take all of these guys, because there is other NHL talent out there. But if you get a couple of these guys on your roster and they hit, it's going to be big.
Indeed.
Coming up next in our segment three, we're going to talk to Ryan Wegman of Hockey Prospectus. He's got a new book out. Stay tuned and find out what that is.
This week, our guest is Ryan Wegman from Hockey Prospectus. Ryan is the managing editor at Hockey Prospectus, and they just released their first hockey prospect guide, a 328-page inclusive in-depth analysis on the top prospects in hockey. So let's talk to Ryan. Ryan, welcome to the show.
Thank you. A quick correction, I'm not the managing editor of the whole site, but I am of the prospect section, which is fairly substantial, but thank you for welcoming me.
Ah, I beg your pardon. What is your title with Hockey Prospectus then?
I guess you can say I'm the managing editor of the prospect or the scouting section.
Nice. All right. So this book that you've put out, it's pretty amazing piece of product. Congratulations on it, for starters.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah. So let's talk about it a little bit and how you came up with your ranking system, the OFP. What is the OFP?
So OFP stands for overall future projection. It's a concept that I've borrowed from baseball, where it's fairly ubiquitous. It's been around for decades in the scouting world in baseball, where teams essentially look at a prospect and they, you know, there's all the different attributes they have in baseball. So you'd have, you know, throwing and hitting and speed and things like that. And they rate each skill on a scale of 20 to 80, 20 being the worst possible you could ever see on a baseball field. So, you know, for hockey parlance, we're talking about, you know, house beer league, you know, substitutes, like really the lowest. You're not really going to see any 20 ranks. An 80 being the top score you get, which is the best of all time. You know, Alex Ovechkin's shot, Wayne Gretzky's puck skills or smarts, you know, things of that nature. So you have, those are your extremes, in which you have very few of them at either end. And really the 20s we don't even look at because they don't even play in the OHL. But then the middle ground, the guys who we figure could be a solid contributing NHL player if their normal projection works out right, would be about a 50. So a 50 for a forward would be kind of a decent third liner, fourth liner. For a defenseman, you're looking at a number four, number five. So meaning not the guy in the bottom of the roster who's pretty much going to be interchangeable with somebody from the farm, but somebody who's got a steady job and is, but not necessarily in the top half of the roster. For a goalie, you're looking at a good backup. So that's a 50. And then, of course, you go up and down by 5 point measurements in each skill. And so then what we did, once we had that idea of, okay, well, what if I borrowed that from baseball, which is really well established, and it really helps, you know, teams rank players and judge players, and it lets all scouts talk with the same language. I said, well, okay, how can we translate this to hockey? So, you know, I've been hanging out at the rinks for a few years now, and I have a few contacts in the game, the scouts and some executives and whatnot. And I took to some of the ones that I have a better rapport with, I took the idea to them, and we kind of went through, well, which categories are important and how would I rank them? And I wanted to make it more almost analytical. I mean, Hockey Prospectus at its heart is an analytical product. And so what we realized is that for skaters, both defensemen and forwards, we're looking at five different types of skills that we want to grade. That would be skating, shooting, puck skills, meaning everything they do with the puck, stick handling, passing, their vision. Number four is their smarts. So we kind of look at that as everything they do off the puck, you know, whether it's defensive play, you know, how much they hustle, whether they stick in their system, things of that nature. And the fifth category is their physicality. Not necessarily fighting, but really, you know, will they play in the corners? Are they playing the tough spots? Are they easy to manhandle, or can they hold their own? That sort of a thing. And so we look at every skater in those five categories, and we try to figure out, based on, you know, what level they're at now, what their age is, what type of player they are. We try to look at how they would that player would project once they are established in the NHL. So, you know, you could say once they're in their mid-20s or so. And you look at players, they remind you of, to say, okay, well, you know, this guy reminds me of player X at that age group, and that player X turned out to be such and such. And so, you know, I think based on what I see now that his skating will be slightly better, slightly worse. And we put a grade on that. And we do that for really every player that is affiliated with an NHL team, whether they've been drafted or signed to an ELC. We try to look at every player who is a prospect. And I think we covered at least 98% of those players. So we look at those five categories for every skater, and we look at seven categories for goalies. You know, that's like athleticism, reflexes, rebound control, play tracking, and a few others besides. And basically, so we get, you know, a score for every player on the 20 to 80 scale on every measurement. And then that number will be, you know, between 20 to 80, it's either a multiple of 5 or 10. So, you know, 55, 45, 40, et cetera. Once we get all those grades, then depending on their position, we run it through a little formula that I developed after kind of playing it off some of my, you know, context in the game. And I come up with the OFP that you mentioned before. And that's what we call, that's the overall future projection. And that is the score that we kind of put on the tag we put on the player at the end of the day. And that score is kind of tells us what we think he can become. It's not a guarantee, and obviously a player with an OFP of, you know, 54 is more of a sure thing if he's in the AHL than he gets that score if he's in the OHL, because he's just that much further along. And, you know, attrition is a very deadly thing we find in the prospect world, but it gives us an idea of what type of player that will be in the future, and that allows us to rate and rank the players. And so when we came with our rankings, we basically said, well, we have these OFPs. We've been doing this all year, and we're a team of 11 of us who are all over the hockey world looking at these players. Let's trust our system. And we just went straight with the OFPs. And you know, we were really happy with the way it turned out.
Yeah, I can imagine you are. It seems like it's a lot of work, and it's been very thorough. You were mentioning that you do all the prospects, and you rank them on your OFP. And the highest ranking prospect from, I think you said it went from 20 or 40 up to 80. The highest ranking score was just under 70. Would you use the same criteria to rate NHL players? And if so, where do you think guys like Crosby, Ovechkin, and Taze would score in comparison?
So we haven't used it on NHL players. I mean, when after we really developed the system early last year, and, you know, took a few months to kind of tweak out some of the rough spots and make sure that we're all really on the same page. But I did find myself, when I was watching the playoffs last spring, kind of looking at players and saying, wow, that's a 65 skater. I remember watching Brent Burns in particular and thinking, like, every single one of his attributes is above a 60. Every single one. And the difference with the NHL guys is that you're not projecting anymore. You're really just saying, well, what is he right now? You know, what is he right now? Because that's more or less as good as he's ever going to be. And you know, I can go kind of off the top of my head and say, well, you know, Crosby is probably in the around a 60, 65 skater. He's probably about a 70 shooter. His puck skills and his smarts are both in the 75 to 80 area, and his physicality is maybe a 55. And I can run it through my system now. This is really off the cuff, but if you're curious, I can run it through my system and tell you what that comes out to.
Yeah, sure.
All right. Let's see what we got here. So let's call it a 60 skating, 65 shooting, 75 puck skills, 80 smarts, and 55 physicality, 69-25. And that's being conservative, because I don't want to go outlandish, you know, kind of off the top of my head. He's obviously one of the best players in the world, in history. So I'm probably a bit low on him. If I give his skating just a little bump up back to a 65, which is probably more reasonable, he's over a 70.
I see. That's very interesting. So this guide would be a really excellent tool for people like our listeners who are in, you know, the deep keeper leagues like the one you and I are in. But your guide isn't really fantasy focused like the Dauber Prospect Guide. So how would you recommend someone who reads your prospect report, how would they use it solely for the purpose of fantasy hockey? How would they use it correctly for that?
Well, you'd look basically for, you know, assuming it's a normal pool that you know, focuses on mostly offensive statistics, mostly, you'd look at the offensive indicators, right? So for example, for every system in the top three, we wrote a full scouting report going into detail on every one of those five attributes, or in the case of if a goalie was in the top three, the seven, and scoring them in each. And obviously, you'd probably pay more attention to, you know, your shooting and your puck skills than, say, your smarts or your physicality. But really, I think ultimately what you have to remember, and this goes in real hockey, you know, I say real with air quotes as I sit here, is the same way with fantasy hockey, is a player's production is as much a function of his opportunity as it is his inherent skill. And so while in fantasy, it doesn't necessarily reward a player for having, you know, a good hockey IQ necessarily. I mean, there are some overlap with offensive IQ. If a player does not have a good hockey IQ, he's less likely to receive opportunities to play favorable minutes on the ice. And if he's not getting those opportunities, he's not going to put up the points. So unless there's a player in the system who we explicitly mention is a very much a defensive zone player, then you can very much use, I think, the OFP, and it would get you a pretty good amount of the way towards drafting high-end prospects who will produce for you at the fantasy level. I hope that answers the question. It's a bit roundabout, but I think ultimately there's a lot of truth to it.
So
So yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah, so some of your rankings sort of fly in the face of conventional or consensus rankings. Is that by design or coincidence? For example, Anthony Mantha in Detroit is the Wings' 10th overall ranked prospect by you at 52.25. Is that by design or is it just coincidence?
So we don't, you know, when we say fly in the face of consensus, I mean, it's not, we don't go on purpose to say, well, everybody's saying this and we're just going to do things to, you know, despite the consensus. I think that would be a little bit self-defeating. But what it really happens, it is by, you know, the design of the system where it will look at a player's all-around game. And in the case of Mantha, who's one that I'm actually, you know, a fair bit familiar with, he has some flaws to his game. You know, he was a high scorer in the Quebec League, and there were a lot of high hopes for him. You know, he's got great size, too, and a lot of good physical tools. And there was a lot of expectation that he would be both quick to the NHL, or at least as far as, you know, the Red Wings are, and they're usually slow to develop system, but relatively quick to the NHL and a big goal scorer. And yet, when you watch Mantha play, and I'm not the only one who said this, to be honest, a lot of people I know in the industry are not that dissimilarly thinking. He's got real problems in the him personally in the hockey IQ area. You know, he can be a very selfish or immature player. And when I say immature, I want to qualify that because all of these players are immature in an extent, to an extent, but he does play kind of a selfish game. You know, he will see, you know, Grand Rapids would be in the offensive zone and his team would lose the puck and he'd get kind of caught up with a defender in the own zone while everybody else is backchecking. He's still yapping at somebody else in the offensive zone and losing the play. You know, he would dally getting back to the bench after long shifts. He wouldn't really play a full team game. He still has a very good shot. You know, his shot, his offensive puck skills are very good, his shot particularly. But, you know, his skating isn't that much better than average. His hockey smarts were disappointing. And while he is a big guy, you know, and physicality is not very heavily weighted for wingers, he didn't get huge physicality scores because he doesn't play a heavy game. So, you know, overall, while he has skills and he has definitely has a good prospect pedigree, I think the deficiencies in his game will make it more difficult for him to be a top shelf player.
Okay. So two more players I found to be ranked quite high. Vitaly Abramov at 57.25 over Bjorkstrand and Matt Spencer 55.75 over Slater Cuckoo. Why so high on these guys?
So I'll start with Abramov, and Abramov was our guy who scouts the Quebec League. That's Craig Smith. He had a hard time, you know. Abramov is kind of his home rink in Gatineau there, and he had a hard time, you know, getting to grips with what Abramov would put out on the ice. You know, and ultimately it took him a while to get to it, but it was very hard for him to kind of ignore the really top end puck skills that Abramov brings to the table. And judging him as a winger, puck skills are fairly heavily weighted in terms of his score. He also had a fairly high hockey IQ score. And that, you know, even though he's undersized and he's not the most powerful, you know, whether a skater or a shooter, he does play a very smart, responsible game. He does the things that you want him to do. So there weren't too many mental errors. And he saw him quite a bit. And you know, to compare it to Bjorkstrand, who – I guess I saw him more when I saw Bjorkstrand. Let me just call up his to call up his area there. Bjorkstrand is also kind of an exciting player. And I like for Bjorkstrand, you know, his highest attribute wasn't quite as high as Abramov's attribute. So Bjorkstrand, I like his shooting. I like his puck skills. The rest of his game is average or a little bit above average. And I think he's going to be a very good player. And I think he could play right now. But really, and then I want to stress this, and I shouldn't really stress this highly enough, when the difference between a guy in the case of Abramov and Bjorkstrand is a quarter of a point, it's not worth getting caught up in whether one guy is slightly higher or one guy is slightly lower. That's very much in the margin of error. So, and that's really all that separates the two of them. I wouldn't get too caught up in that. It'd be more interesting to say, well, you know, Abramov is a 57.25 and Milano is a 58.50. That's a big gap. Or between Milano and Pierre-Luc Dubois and Zach Werenski, to stick with the Blue Jackets, those are pretty sizable gaps. A gap of a quarter of a point, you really should not read that as being, you know, sacrosanct. A is better than B. It's very much margin of error at that point.
Okay.
And so, do you want to repeat the other one you mentioned?
Matt Spencer over Slater Cuckoo.
Right. So that is something that, you know, we definitely want to look again at this year, not necessarily in those two per se, but in how the system looks at two guys like that. And again, the gap between them is infinitesimal. So I don't want to get caught up in 55.5 and 55.75 because there's really, you know, there's four guys in that, five guys in that system who are within about a half a point of one another. But what I want to relook at next year is the way that, and this is more from a philosophical point of view, the way that players can tend to have higher grades before they graduate to the professional game. Right now, when we thought about it this year, we decided to err on the side of, I guess, optimism, in the sense that they have not yet proven that they cannot do it. Whereas a player who has played in the AHL, you know, and the more extensively, the better your sample size, those types of players have proven more what their limitations are and will be as an NHLer. So with Cuckoo, we kind of know what he is and what he's going to be. There's really no more room for growth for him. It's for him, it's a matter of, you're ready now. This is what you are. This is what role we have for you. If there is indeed a spot. Whereas with a player like Spencer, there still is room for growth. He still is, I think he's 19 right now, and there's room for him to actually show more in his game. And from what he's shown in the OHL, there is some idea that he could be a bit more. But again, with the two of them, the difference in their OFP is so small, I would not take the actual ordinal ranking as being, you know, a definitive A is better than B. They're pretty much in the same group.
Okay. You also mentioned when you were speaking about Abramov that his puck skills were weighted very high. You used the five characteristics that you mentioned, skating, shooting, puck skills, smarts, and physicality. Are all these characteristics equally important and balanced? And then how do you value some over others?
Sure. So to stick with that example, it depends on the position. So with a winger, and Abramov we have ranked as a winger, we rate skating, shooting, and puck skills equally. They each get about one quarter of the full weight. And then hockey IQ is actually about 15%, and physicality is 10%. So that would be for wingers. And so, you know, in that sense, his puck skills are very, very important, while his hockey smarts are not as important, but the grade was high enough that it did boost his score, you know, significantly enough. With a center, it would be more weighted towards hockey IQ and skating per se than it's more weighted towards his puck skills and his hockey IQ are the top two, and then everything else kind of filters down from there. Defensemen are gonna be much different, with, you know, physicality being weighted more heavily.
All right. And one last question for you. One common question we're asking all our scouts guests when they come on is, what do you look for in a player that tells you that they can be successful at a higher level or eventually the NHL?
So, you know, this kind of tells you what we look for. We look for the things that we weight highest. So if I'm looking at, say, a defenseman, you know, as we focus on forwards very easily, but I really look to see kind of a high IQ game. I don't want to see too many mental mistakes. Or, you know, depending on what level he's at least compared to his peers. I want to see a player who can skate. I think for every skater, you need to be able to skate well. Skating is heavily weighted for everybody, regardless of position. You know, I like, you know, there are certain guys that kind of catch my eye more than others. You know, for example, with defensemen, I like, I have a thing for, you know, explosive physicality. When a guy just explodes into somebody without losing his position, you could look at a guy like Charlie McAvoy, who was drafted in the first round by Boston last year. That's the kind of, you know, explosive physicality that gets me excited to watch a player. But just great speed really does it. If you can't skate well, you're behind the eight ball no matter what. I look for creativity, especially in centers or, you know, offensive players. I want to see somebody who can be creative, not just fast. There are plenty of players who can skate like the wind, but can't do much with it. You know, a guy that I thought of a lot, you know, when I used to live in Toronto, I'd watch the Leafs all the time. And I remember Mason Raymond, very good skater, but it was like watching a table hockey player. You know, He'd go up the ice and down the ice, and it'd all be really fast, but he kind of wasn't really able to do much once he got there. And that, you know, that's kind of a limitation. I like to see players who have a well-balanced skill set, you know, that can do a little bit of everything, but you want to have at least one skill that's kind of the standing skill, the one that sticks out above all the others and really puts them apart. So kind of at least 160 on if we go back to my 2080 parlance here. That's important to me, depending on the position, which 60 it is important. I don't really care too much for the physical game. Well, I did mention I do like watching, you know, explosively physical defensemen. We don't really score that highly. That's only going to help a player's OFP so much. It's really going to be mostly the skating, the shooting, the puck skills, and the smarts. And if you can combine those and have one carrying skill, we'll like it. You know, I will definitely like it.
That is good stuff. Thank you very much, Ryan. Tell our listeners where they can find your work and how they can get their hands on a copy of your guide.
Absolutely. If you go to hockeyprospectus.com, that's prospectus, P-R-O-S-P-E-C-T-U-S, .com. Right now, I think it's the second link. There's a link to the book. And I think right now it also comes with our NHL projections, free of charge if you buy the book. That's our full what's called the Vokoda, which tells you what every NHL player will do in a given season. And it's you can buy the download now for $12.99. It gives you at least 20 players on every team in the NHL, including full scouting reports on the top three of every system. We have a top 100 list. We rank the systems. We rank every position. And we just have as more detailed than you're going to get about NHL prospects anywhere if you don't work for an NHL team. And I think in some cases, even if you do work for an NHL team. There was a lot of work that went into it between myself and the 10 members of the Hockey Prospectus scouting team. And if you have a question about any NHL prospect, we have you covered.
I would concur with that. It's a very thorough analysis of all the relevant prospects in hockey. Thanks for coming on the show, Ryan. Really appreciate your time.
My pleasure. Thank you, guys.
Well, Peter, another great interview. We'd like to thank Ryan Wegman for joining us today and explaining the overall future projection in the Hockey Prospectus Prospect Guidebook and how to use it as a fantasy manager. You can find Ryan on Twitter at RAWegman, and also in our show notes where you will find a link to that guidebook that we were talking about. We also want to thank you, the listener, for tuning in as well. Without you guys, we wouldn't be able to produce a podcast, so please continue to listen. Check out our show notes at dauberprospects.com/DPR03. If you have any prospect fantasy questions, email us at prospectradio@dauberprospects.com and subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Don't forget to give us a 5-star review and share our podcast with anybody who may be interested. Please also give the show a follow at @DPR_show on Twitter and at @Zwombag and at @PHarling are our handles. That's it for now. Talk to you soon, Peter.
Cheers.